Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tab. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back again tonight with a special episode talking to Quentin Crisco. He's of On Tap Sportsnet. He's going to talk to us a little bit about Eddie Jackson, sure, but also some of the other Ravens who used to be Bears. I'm thinking about Kyle Fuller. I'm thinking about Roquan Smith, guys like that who came, got rejuvenated somewhat in Baltimore. Kyle Fuller's was very short before he was hurt. Roquan is still going on, though. And talk about some of those players and maybe what helped them become a better player in Baltimore than they had been with Chicago. So first of all, Quentin, really appreciate you coming on. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, Ken, thanks for having me on. I'm excited to talk football any place, anytime. So I'm just glad to be here.
All right. Impressive looking man cave down there with the Butkus jersey in the background. For those who are listening to the audio version of this, which that's all you get on this channel.
You would have no idea I'm in South Philadelphia right now.
Well, fair enough. So anyway, the Eddie Jackson signing is I wouldn't say it's polarized the Baltimore community at all, but most people are fairly optimistic about what he could be. The Ravens have had a number of players in recent years come to this defense and get kind of a Ravens uplift of playing in a better structure. I don't want to pin that on the Bears, but I think that's probably been true of the Bears defense the last few years. That Josh Bynes came here late in his career twice and bailed the Ravens defense out as the Mike linebacker. LJ Fort came in, you know, basically a cast off at his eighth or ninth season, played well. Marcus Peters, of course, came in. He was over 9 yards a target with the Rams. They traded him for nothing, and by the end of the season, he was all pro one. So that was a pretty good pickup. Justin Houston, of course, came to the Ravens late in his career, and the Ravens had general success finding some pass rushers, including Jadeveon Clowney and Kyle Van Noy as well, who came in and had career years late in their career. And then a younger player who came to the Ravens, obviously not on his last chance or anything, but Roquan Smith at age 25, had some uneven play with the Bears. I think he's clearly been a better player for Baltimore than he was in Chicago. But maybe we start with him and talk a little bit about what you saw out of him in Chicago, and if you continue to follow in Baltimore, what you've seen from him here.
Yeah, no. Roquan was a fan favorite in Chicago, and you know, most of the fan base was pretty sad to see him go. And the only people who weren't sad to see him go were the people saying, "Don't pay a middle linebacker." And they got the same fate with the Tremaine Edmonds signing anyways. So it was kind of like that. There's some sour grapes there with some folks still. But ultimately, we all thought Roquan was really kind of the heartbeat of the defense at times, especially like the year he was traded, because let's be honest, that defense was lacking so much talent. And Roquan was really one of the only guys making plays out there. Him and Eddie were probably the only two guys consistently making a difference for the Bears in, what was that, 2021 or 2022 when he was traded, I believe. Mm-hmm. So really one of the things that really hurt Roquan in Chicago was a constant change of scheme, constant change of what's going on around him. Like his rookie year under Vic Fangio, he's looking really solid. And there was some maturity stuff there that he kind of had to grow into as well. But we thought he was he looked like a guy who was going to really grow into something in Chicago and be, you know, the next Chicago linebacker, the next great one. Mm-hmm. And then Vic Fangio leaves, right? Goes, becomes the head coach at Denver. We bring in, what was his name? Chuck, the former Indianapolis coach.
Pagano?
Yeah, Chuck Pagano to be defense coordinator. Strong coach, good scheme, all that. But it was just, it was almost like there was catering to try to keep Fangio's defense in place for a while there. And, you know, if you're going to bring in a DC, tell him you're running your scheme. It's yours. Like, not trying to cater to what the players had before. And I think that impacts the defense and the way it played. You had some stuff with, I think for Roquan, it's really important that you can keep him clean up front. Mm-hmm. And the Bears had some issues with keeping Eddie Goldman on the field, their nose tackle. Akeem Hicks was getting injured. And so they had kind of a rotating front in front of him, a revolving door of defensive tackles and nose tackles there at times. And I think that impacted his play because, I mean, I don't think his size is ever going to allow him to be the best stack and shed linebacker. So he kind of needs someone to keep him clean. When that happens, he can be one of the best linebackers in the game because of his instincts, his speed, his aggression. There's so much to like in his game, and the athleticism that he has really allows him to be a difference maker in coverage too. But it was up and down when that defensive line in front of him was more of a revolving door like that. And then after Pagano left, you know, they had Sean Desai in there for a little bit. And I think Roquan had a better year under Desai, but the defensive talent was dwindling it by then. And you still like kind of the same issue. Roquan was having to pull more weight. And that's just tough on a guy who was 23 at the time, maybe 22, 23. And then in comes Matt Eberflus, whole different 360 change on the defense, right? You go from a 3-4 base or base, but a 3-3 base, I guess, with a nickel. But that one gapping scheme required Roquan to be more of that stack shed linebacker.
That specific alignment you're discussing, if he has three down linemen, two outside linebackers, one inside linebacker, I would call jumbo nickel. I understand the Bears call it penny within their system.
You know, I'm not sure exactly what they call it, so I'll trust you there.
But it's one inside linebacker, right? So you're sacrificing an inside linebacker to get an extra defensive lineman on the field when you also have five DBs.
Yeah, I think so. You're saying under Eberflus's scheme right now?
What the defense you were just describing, I think it was you were attaching it to Eberflus. It was you called it a 3-3-5. So a 3-3-5 typically I would think of as being three down linemen, two outside linebackers.
Oh, yeah, no, that was I was talking about under Desai. Okay. That was it. I said 3-4 base, but who runs a 3-4 base anymore? You know, you almost always have a nickel on the field, so you're taking a linebacker off.
Okay.
But that was just me trying to get a little cute there with my terminology, I guess.
Fair enough.
When Eberflus came in, it switched to the 4-3 front, the one gapping scheme that asked linebackers to really be more present up at the line of scrimmage in their run fits. And that requires Roquan to play through blockers more. He's much better playing around blockers. He's better using his speed, using what he is good at. And, you know, when Eberflus was hired, a lot of us kind of thought Roquan might not fit this because he's not what Eberflus wants. You know, Eberflus wants big, long linebackers who can play through guys. And Tremaine Edmonds probably isn't playing through anybody, but he's got the desired length and desired size. He's more of a clear profile fit. And there was always a little tension, I think, between the Bears staff and Roquan over that and over his utilization within the scheme, because the Bears staff wasn't looking at their player and saying, let's make sure he's doing what he's good at. They were looking at the player and saying, let's fit him in this round hole over here and see if it works.
Okay. So there has been a little bit of that with Roquan in Baltimore. And I'm not saying they force him to do what he's not good at specifically, but it's more like they're a set group of responsibilities, and Patrick Queen wasn't a good coverage linebacker. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Trenton Simpson is going to be necessarily either, but since Roquan can do that, he probably rushes the passer a lot less than he otherwise might because he's such a valuable coverage asset to move around, keep in zone while you have your will linebacker run free and try and make a play. There's definitely been some of that, but the thing we've been really impressed with Roquan about, I'm speaking for myself, not all Ravens fans, is his recognition skills are just much, you know, night and day versus Patrick Queen at that Mike linebacker spot in terms of getting to the spot quickly, recognizing where the ball is going, and fitting the run very well. And you mentioned using his quickness there before, and that really improved Queen's play as well in terms of him trailing that play. Queen, not the leader in terms of getting him. And you think Roquan is a bad stack and shed player. Patrick Queen was a hell of a lot worse. So yeah. Much lighter. And
obviously Roquan has the dog in him to do it. It's just more a size question with him.
All right. Well, that's a good insight into Roquan. I guess it's easy for me to see how at age 25, he could come to a Ravens defense. They could find, you know, the right role for him. And certainly he's done a lot for the Ravens, and they have asked him to do some things that are probably not his top things to do. But still, he's certainly played very well. I guess the question now comes up with a player like Eddie Jackson, who's really certainly on the back nine. I think there's a question of whether he's on the back three or not at this point, whether he's on the 16th hole or the 13th hole. But we're seeing a guy who has given up 10 yards of target total for the last 4 years. If you look at PFR, it's 10.4 yards. If you look at PFF, it's 10.0 yards. Either way, it's not good. He did have a really good year in 22. But I kind of want you to tell me how the injury has played into his performance over the last couple of years.
Yeah, so the injury, I believe it was a torn Achilles in 2022, got back for the 2023 season, but I would say not quite the same guy. Like, that Achilles at his age is a really tough injury. You tend to lose some athleticism, or maybe not tend to, but you run the risk of losing a little bit of that burst. And that burst is something that kept him in a really strong territory of safeties, in my opinion, for a few years now, where it wasn't quite there in 23 last year. There were a lot of times you'd be sitting there watching the tape and thinking, man, last year, 2 years ago, Eddie Jackson makes that play, but he's a step slow right now.
Okay. So early December of 22 is when he was reported to have some sort of a Lisfranc injury, which was not going to require surgery. Is it that or the Achilles that really has stuck with him through the 23 season?
I'm sorry. It was the Lisfranc. For some reason I had it in my head, it was an Achilles, and I was talking through that, but the Lisfranc, I mean, I think it did have that effect on him where he just wasn't quite getting the same burst that we were used to from him. And he was never the most explosive player. He was always more of a smooth athleticism and kind of a surprising athleticism when coming downhill on a pass or covering deep range, but more of a glider. Like, I always say that the best center field free safeties, that they don't burst, they don't run fast, they just glide to wherever they need to go. And that's what Eddie Jackson had. And it just felt like he was not quite at the normal speed last year as he was in previous years.
Okay. All right. Fantastic. So anyway, in theory, the Ravens obviously worked him out. They know a little bit further where he is from an injury standpoint at this point, but in theory, he could be getting towards the end of whatever was holding it back in terms of the Lisfranc injury. Or the Ravens may have just signed him on a non-guaranteed basis. They're going to look at him during training camp, and they're going to see if he makes the roster or not, or, you know, or somewhere in between where he's got $250,000 of guaranteed money, but he's not paid a lot. I am making the assumption that he'd have signed for a vet min amount, given the number of safeties that are out there on the market right now. Would that be your assumption as well?
Yeah, that's what I would think. I mean, I who knows why maybe he just didn't want to do OTAs and all that, and that's why he sat this long. But I have to think a guy who's signing at this point is probably a minimum guy.
Okay. All right. Very good. Okay. The other thing, you want to talk a little bit about why the yards per target number is so high. I know you had some theories you were bringing forth in the production meeting. Anything you'd like to talk about there?
Yeah. I mean, so ultimately, I think because you'd mentioned the stats were pretty rough 2020, 2021, and then kind of came back around 2022. You look at that Bears secondary then. I mean, you had Jalen Johnson and Eddie Jackson, who were, you don't throw at those guys because you have these other three players out there in coverage who I believe it was like Tashawn Gibson, Kendall Vildor, and a revolving door nickelbacks. I think pre-show I said to you a clown car of nickelbacks. Like it was just line. A bunch of different guys. But you'd watch the tape and you would see opposing quarterbacks look, find where Eddie Jackson was, and then throw the other way because it was kind of like, why would I throw at this guy when I have these guys to throw at? So as far as the stats go, I think there were moments where Eddie Jackson was probably the closest defender on some of them, but I'm not sure whether I would say that it was automatically on him. There were a fair amount of coverage busts, and when he was thrown at, it was a complete bust. Like, so when he did get thrown at, it was used, like, I believe his completion percentage for a lot of that time was somewhere around 70 or 80%. So it was like when he got thrown at, it was like, okay, well, there's a complete bust out here. Maybe the guy was pressing, maybe he was trying to make a play because the Bears were down by 15 points or 14 points, 20 points late in the game, and he was saying, I need to jump a route. But I don't think the numbers were as bad as the tape in those years in 22, I think we saw him get a bit of a resurgence of like under a D coordinator who is looking for ball hawks and Matt Eberflus, like looking for turnovers. His entire defense is driven by turnovers, giving him the green light to go get the football. And he was doing it pretty well before that injury. I think you're on mute, Ken.
It wouldn't be a show if I didn't do that to myself at least one. Take a drink, put on mute, don't come back. Anyway.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tap. Also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tap. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's good to hear that about Jackson. He is a couple of years older now. Obviously, the chance of recovery to a portion of what he was in 22 becomes lower and lower with each passing year. At least that's the way I would say it. The other thing that has really never been good about Eddie Jackson is the missed tackle rate has always been high. So he's got a 14.5% career missed tackle rate. If I just look at that among 2023 safeties, using the PFF definition in both cases and rank them percentile wise, it would fit in the 32nd percentile of safeties for 2023. So well below average. But it's a little worse than that because PFF has a trailing period over which they look at missed tackles. So they're averaging them over the last few years. At least I think this is true because their tackle missed tackle rates have been going up and their definition has been getting tougher. So if I'm comparing Jackson's missed tackle rates, some of that's on an easier definition from, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago. And he's, you know, I'm averaging that and comparing it to 2023 only, where the standard is tougher. And he still shows up in the 32nd percentile when I think he probably would be in the 26th or 27th percentile. Not that that's not huge a difference, but it's but he's the wrong on the wrong side of the grading curve in terms of how it's been for the last few years. So hopefully, you know, in division in particular, one of the reasons the Ravens really can't go with Ardarius Washington, I don't believe, who's a 5'8", 175 pound guy back there. Might not be instincts. I think the real problem is that he's really too small for the tackling responsibilities of the position. So I'm hoping that Jackson could provide that. Is that an unreasonable hope?
Set your bar low. Is he's going to miss tackles? Like he's not a forceful tackler. He's just not. He's a long, gangly safety who is not going to be out there imposing his will on a lot of people. He will surprise you in run fits at times. Like there were in 22 when the Bears were, you know, the worst team in football, he was saving their run defense at times. But I wouldn't set the expectation at, oh, this guy's a great run defender. Like he's gonna miss tackles in the run fits. He's a lot of times it seems like he is overshooting the outside shoulder of the guy he's going to chase down, and he will just almost fly by them, forcing him back inside, mm-hmm. you know, maybe getting an arm on him or something, but that's about it. And unless the next guy cleans it up, it's nothing there. I'm not sure exactly how much of that might be scheme, might be fixable or what, but he does a good job of forcing guys back inside, forcing them, you know, towards the cylinder of the field where the help is at. He is very conscious of that and does a good job of it. But as far as being the guy to actually make the solo tackles, that's just not who Eddie really is. I wouldn't expect that out of him, for him to suddenly change that of his career.
I've got to look at some of the things you're telling me about getting beat deep, which you mentioned earlier, and some of the missed tackles, and really see if a high percentage of his yards came in terms of yak relative to other safeties. Then is a case where the yards per target of 10 includes, you know, 4 yak per play or something, such that that's a lot of the yards he's giving up, or is it differently distributed? And I have to relativize that to other safeties, but I'd be really interested to know the answer to that question.
I would say it's differently distributed because I think a lot of the missed tackle issues, I believe, do come on run fits. Like it is the run game much more than I think it's the pass game, just based off my memory. Like I could be mistaken on that, but based on what I recall, it's usually he's pretty reliable at getting stops as a tackler against the pass. And really, I think he plays the football a lot against the pass. So when he is in position to make the tackle on a catch, he's in position. You know, he is playing the football, so he's coming right on the football. It's not like he is in pursuit of the runner necessarily.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. We're seeing the Ravens make a big bet, not in terms of cap dollars, because I expect that's very small, but they're making a big bet on a team that is playoff ready and a guy they're going to depend on, not only to play the split field role, but to be the backup for Marcus Williams. Probably the only backup, because there really isn't anybody else unless they want to pull Hamilton completely out of any kind of role close to the line of scrimmage. Is this a bet that you think is a good one with Eddie at this point in his career?
I think for the price tag, I definitely think so. I mean, if you are looking at him for a split field safety role, I think that is where you can hope he can still revive his career. Like the Bears ran a lot of cover three last year. They also ran more cover four than you'd expect. Mm-hmm. But I think the cover four was partially because that's where Eddie is most comfortable. And that's what he's best at, is that quarter of the field, maybe getting late rotations in there. But cover three, I think, is what he kind of needs to avoid at this point. trying to keep his area of the field a little bit smaller, because I do think he has lost that half step, that step, however you might want, whatever amount you might want to define it. I think narrowing his coverage area gives him a chance to be that playmaker, as opposed to being a deep center fielder where he's covering a third of the middle of the field on, you know, two way go. You know, it's a little bit different than covering half the field in a split field concept, or a quarter of the field in quarters.
Okay. Well, there certainly are opportunities with Marcus Williams really being the free safety on this team, and a guy who almost never comes to the line of scrimmage. There would certainly be opportunities, I think, to have Jackson not covering any deep third, despite being in there as a split field player. If you want to rotate, use him as a robber, bring him up into one of the short zones, whatever it might be. So there are opportunities. That's good to hear if you're still positive on him being a reasonable split field option. We do have.
Well, and with that, I mean, so those late, like, there was a point in his career where there were, you know, friends of mine who are DB coaches would say Eddie Jackson is the best safety at late rotations in the NFL. Like, that is so in a robber role. Mm-hmm. He has the instincts. He has the knowledge. Like, I wrote down some notes here. Recognition and football IQ, still there. Decisive, still there. Anticipates throws, still there. Aggressive run tackler was never there. But in the run fits, he will surprise you at times. Deep cover zone and range over the top, that's where I have question marks, though. That used to be clear positives of definitely there. And that's where I'm not sure. So if you're talking more a robber role or coming more a rotating downhill in any way, I think there's a chance he might be able to do a little something.
Okay, well, that's exciting. That's really good news to hear from someone who's a little bit closer to it, obviously. And I don't think they'll ask. I don't think basically he'll ever be asked to play single high. So I think what he'll play, what the Ravens have done the last few years, is intimidate opposing quarterbacks with less than elite arms. And in the division, that's Joe Burrow. He's got just very average arm, is actually distinctly worried about throwing the ball deep with two safeties there. And, you know, with Geno Stone and Williams, the Ravens really forced Burrow to go to the outside and short a lot. And so if Eddie Jackson can fulfill that component, now you talk about range on the deep, but oftentimes that means range out of single high deep. If he's in a split field role, you're naturally taking his responsibility set down from what I would call, you know, 60% of the field to half the field. So right there, you should get a benefit in terms of how much area he has to cover. The instincts are still good enough, you think, to have the range to at least be able to understand where he needs to be?
Yeah, I mean, so. Really, I mean, I tend to think instincts don't disappear. It's just more like your perception of what you can do and where you need to be to do something, right? So that's where last year we did see him a step slow on a lot of stuff, and the instincts didn't quite sync up with the physical needs. But I do think that he's the type of player who can understand and adjust as he needs to. We've seen him adjust his role with the Bears multiple times. I do think that he didn't think he lost anything last year. And I think he might come off the season saying, I lost something, and how am I going to fix it? Like, we've seen him bounce back from stuff before. So I hope he can do it again, because he's probably one of my favorite Bears of the last 5-6 years, something like that, since he was drafted. So I do think there is a chance that he can do something there. And I do think a lot of what we saw last year was that single high. Because you look at the guy, he was playing next to Jaquan Brisker. Jaquan Brisker's a lot of fun. Jaquan Brisker will smack you in the mouth. He's going to come down hard on the cover three buzz and kill that flat guy. But he's not a deep safety. So that put a lot of onus on Eddie last year, while dealing with the comeback from the injury, the potentially lost step and aging and all that, in more of a more defined, specific role. I do think there could be something there.
All right. Well, I'm already more optimistic hearing this, what I think is a fairly measured and reasonable take about it. Let me toss out one other thing. Eddie Jackson, early in his career, was had incredible second man to the ball skills. Tip balls, you know, being there to force fumbles as the second man of the ball in particular. I think there is even some criticism of him for being too aggressive at trying to force fumbles as opposed to make tackles. But talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of his missed tackle numbers. I think that he, because as you were asking about the run after catch numbers potentially being high, I was thinking like, he does have missed tackles in the pass game. But it's usually when someone else gave something up and he's the second guy there and trying to, you know, punch the ball out. But he's not Peanut Tillman doing boxing training all offseason. He's not punching it that hard. So I do think there is some tendency to go for the force fumble too much there. But I also just think that those instincts, like being a potentially a step slow at this point for second man of the ball stuff, I think you're still right there, whether it's a forced fumble or a tip ball, like maybe you have to dive for it instead of catching it in stride. But I think that there's still potential there for him to be, to still have enough range to be effective in those or to be opportunistic in those situations.
Okay. Well, very good. This is a very optimistic viewpoint on Eddie Jackson. I appreciate it. And I'm glad to hear there are some explanations for some obviously some fairly poor numbers over the last four seasons since his last Pro Bowl All Pro year, but it's that this is good. And what kind of probability would you assign to the following exacta? The Ravens are able to place Eddie Jackson in a split field role. He could be healthy and good enough that the Ravens can continue to play Kyle Hamilton at the nickel role, where he's the best horizontal defender in the NFL. He'll take away the strong side of the football field for you. It's really the most important thing Eddie Jackson provides the Ravens is that Kyle Hamilton can play up front. Doesn't even have to be a great player. Just has to be okay enough to hold that off. What probability the Ravens get that from Eddie Jackson this year?
You know, I'd put it somewhere around just below 50. Probably. Like, I think there's a shot. I have a hard time saying it's 50-50 flat, but I think there's a shot. I do worry a bit about, you know, whether injuries keep compounding. So the health part there does make me hit the brakes a little. But then I think about, like, you know, the Ravens have a lot of talent in their secondary. They can give Eddie a pretty solid size, or not solid, a pretty shrunken zone to just say, hey, if the ball comes here, it's yours. You know, like there's a lot of length and a lot of speed and talent in that secondary that I think you can do some interesting stuff with for an instinctive ball hawk like that. Especially a guy who walked into the NFL, had multiple pick sixes as a rookie, had six more the next year, and his first 3 years, it was all top 10 defenses, and he was a major, major part of that. Like, I think that the guy does have high standards for himself and for the guys around him, and there's something to be said for that, and I'm sure that fits the Ravens way perfectly.
All right. Well, Quentin, I really appreciate this. A good amount of detail on who Eddie is. We appreciate this and some of your thoughts about Roquan and his ability to adapt here in Baltimore to what's going on. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter. My handle is BuckHisStats. So at BuckHisStats. I also write for OnTap Sportsnet. It's a Chicago sports blog, and more than just Chicago sports. We cover a whole plethora of stuff, and also the Bears On Tap podcast for Bears talk, and the Shaving Points podcast for NFL talk. We're going through our series right now, going team by team and talking through the whole roster.
Okay, so it's that has a gambling ban. I'm taking yes. it if it's Shaving Points. Yeah. Okay, very good. All right. I appreciate you coming on. Other folks out there, if you want to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. We're really talking about an open set of opportunities now. We've really missed the opportunity to do another concerns podcast at this point. There will be an opportunity before the regular season starts, perhaps to do one or two more of those. DM me if you'd like on that. Otherwise, if you'd like to do recollections, those are still open as well. Quentin, thanks again for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tap, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tap. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.